This is the ElitePitness.com Hardcore Raw Q&A.
With Steve Smee, the Mason, and Trevor K. Caritzen.
This is a Raw Q&A, so no topics are off limits.
Please leave a message after the beep.
Beep! Call 911. Let them know that there's somebody acting erratically that's delusional and is having some serious problems, and have them come and take you over to the nearest psychological evaluation clinic.
Your message is too long. Thank you.
Hey, what's up, guys? Another great show ahead. Let's start off with a relationship topic. These are always fun. So we have a relationship topic that came in. They're asking this question for Trevor, since he's our science geek, and Matt, since he is married. He wants to know, he says, in my country, I live in a third world country overseas, we just recently were able to get on the internet. Our government scientists are saying that women have brains that are smaller than men, so we shouldn't listen to our wives. My question to Trevor and Matt, is this true? And if I did follow our government scientists, what would happen to my marriage?
Well, the size of your brain is actually kind of irrelevant because you only use 10% of your brain. So, I mean, someone with a smaller brain, if they're using, let's say, 15%, would actually be more intelligent than a person with a larger brain using only 10. So, then no. It's, whoever told you that was probably pulling your leg.
And then, and Trevor, a man's brain is the same as a woman, right?
Well, men are bigger, so our brains are slightly larger, but I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean you're smarter.
I mean, if we're going to say that humans are the top of the chain and we're the most intelligent species, I mean, there's some pretty big animals out there, and I don't think they're necessarily smarter because their brains are bigger. I would say, maybe do some more research now that you got the internet instead of looking at just your government scientists. But I can tell you this, if I were to treat my wife like I was smarter than her because my brain's bigger, I'd be out the door probably today. And you can't do that. You have to be equals. You know, if one person's going to be way too dominant or going to be condescending towards the other one, it's not going to work out in the end anyway. You got to have some type of equality in the relationship and respect for each other.
Well, Matt, you said, go ahead, Trevor.
An elephant has a brain like 10 times the size of us, but have you seen an elephant tie a tie? I haven't.
Well, Matt said something interesting a couple months ago on the podcast. He said that he has the easier job, even though his wife is staying at home, because he just goes to work and comes home. His wife is the one who's take care of the kids, do the laundry, do everything at home, be the homemaker. So this guy needs to realize that, you know, you're, even though you're the one bringing in the money, that doesn't make you smarter or better than your wife. Because if you reverse roles and let her go make the money, you have to stay at home and do all the bullshit at home, you drive yourself crazy. I'd be bored out of my mind doing that shit. So that, I mean, that's my opinion. So our next relationship question is for Trevor and Matt as well. He says that my wife recently shaved her pistachio, and he says that he's been used to it being very hairy down there. So he wants to know, should he confront her about it and tell her, hey, I liked it the way it was before, or should he just like... Is it up to a woman to decide how it should be down there?
Well, she probably shaved it to make him happy. Like, if you think about it, shaving it is extra work for her, so she'd probably be more happy not shaving. But I think this guy's nuts. You actually want a hairy vagina? Like, I think this guy is the weirdo, not his wife.
So I'm going to take a different view here. I'm going to go out on a limb and make some assumptions, and that's going to be that he's not going down there to please her the way that she wants, and she's thinking that it's because she's got a beard down there, and maybe that's a way to get him down there. That's That's what I would guess. If that's not the case, then yeah, I mean, I would think it's better, but I guess there's, you know, weird fetishes out there. We talked about that on another podcast too. So yeah, if you're concerned about it, just ask her. Ultimately, it's her body and she's going to do what she wants. Maybe it stinks and she wants to keep it clean. I don't know. But all you can do is ask her about it. You got to be comfortable with your partner, you know, and then you figure it out after that. But you get less brush burns, I'm sure, on your penis with her being cleaned.
I prefer a woman with a shave down below. Women usually, like, out west, like probably where Trevor lives, they're probably going to be more hairy than women out of the east. It's kind of like an East Coast, West Coast thing. Like, I've dated women like from like Idaho and shit, and maybe because they're Mormons or something, but they don't shave down there. And I've dated women like, you know, from like hippie areas of the country, and they don't shave. So it just depends where the woman is from. So my thing is, like, let her decide that. I don't buy into the fact that, oh, if it's hairy, it doesn't smell good or whatever. That's just not true. Because, I mean, you could be dirty down there. If she has an STD or something, it's going to smell. So I would say let her do whatever she's comfortable with. And this way, if she thinks that she's beautiful, she'll love you a lot. So that's it. So, Matt, you had a relationship question. Trevor, did you have a relationship question? You had mentioned a couple weeks ago you did. If Matt wants to go, and then Trevor, you can ask.
I got a good one. Yeah. I got a good one for Trevor because he's been more, you know, in the dating scene the last few years. And the guy just basically wants to know, should he or should he not be discussing past relationships with this girl he's dating? And kind of, you know, the same way from her point of view, should he be worried if she does? And how do you not discuss it, you know, when you're coming from a relationship, you're going to a new one, when you have something to compare to?
I think if it comes up in conversation, it's fine. But if she's constantly talking about an ex, that's a red flag that she's not over him. It's just not like, if you're with that person, you wouldn't want to be talking about another female. Like, that's just not right. So, I mean, like, if she asks you, or, like, maybe she's, like, maybe you guys are, like, on Facebook together or Instagram together, and then, like, she sees, like, a photo of you and a girl, and she asks, like, oh, is that your ex-girlfriend? Then, you know, like, that's kind of warranted. But, I mean, if she just kind of, like, is always talking about an ex-boyfriend, or, like, she's always asking you about past relationships, that kind of is a red flag. She doesn't trust you.
I don't like if a girl I'm dating is has connections to her ex. I understand if they share a child together. That's excusable. But women emotionally attached to men. So women are more likely to cheat on men with exes because they do carry those emotional attachments. Men, on the other hand, will cheat because with random people, like someone they meet in a bar, someone they meet on Tinder or something, because they don't carry those same emotional attachments. So I want her to be over her ex completely, move on. She shouldn't have him in her phone unless they share a child. Other than that, there's no fucking reason why she needs to be having any sort of connection with him. If he's calling her, if he's even in her phone, to me, that's a red flag. That's just ridiculous. So that's a huge red flag. If you're on a first date and she's getting called and picking up and it's her ex, run. Don't walk.
I do have a relationship question. What are your guys' thoughts on mixing work and a relationship? Like, basically, let's say you're working with someone, you guys hit it off. Do you think dating them is a smart idea, or do you think that's like a red flag and a possible disaster waiting to happen?
You know, if I had to, I've never dealt with that before. I'd have to say it's probably not the best idea. It's hard. Like, I don't want to say no, you know, you shouldn't do it, because if you meet the right person, then, you know, it shouldn't matter where they work. You know, that shouldn't be a factor, but I wouldn't go out searching for that, because it's just going to lead to issues down the road, depending on, you know, if you have the same boss, if you're her boss or vice versa. You know, it's just going to lead to conflict. And, you know, you see it with people getting bored of each other. because you're around each other all the time. Like it happens in marriages, you know, you go through that, what do you call it? The 7-year itch. It's the same idea, right? If you're not only together with that person and then you're working with them every day too, at some point you need some time on your own, you know? And it's like, then what do you have to talk about? Because you're always together. You're never, you know, separate. So I would avoid it, but I would say if it does happen by chance, you know, you try to work around it, I guess.
So may I answer this really quick before we have to move on? Listen, I mean, if there's a couple different ways to approach this. Let's say hypothetically you both become dentists, or you both are dentists, and you're like, hey, let's start our practice together. And because I've had my former dentist, it was a husband wife that ran it, and I also my former vet that I would take my dog to. It was a husband wife that ran the place. When you're mixing business in your relationship like that, there's no bigger turnoff than coming home and be like, wow, that person that I saw today, they had like 5 cavities. I have to do a root canal on them, or they didn't pay. I did 2 root canals. Then they wouldn't pay me and they left without paying. You bring the problems home when you do that. And it's hard to separate that. And if you, you know, I completely disagree with working with someone in that capacity. But let's say you're in college, you're working at Starbucks for the summer, and you meet someone at work, and you're only gonna have this job part-time, and then, you know, after you graduate college, you're gonna go on to bigger and better things, then I don't see the problem. It's not like long-term. There's a cliche that you shouldn't marry someone who's in your same industry. And that's true, because now you're gonna be competing with them. It's going to be unromantic. So try to keep that separate, you know, long term. But I mean, if it's a short term thing, you know, meeting someone at work is a great place to meet them, because women can trust you because they see you every day. They got to know you, as workers. And don't date your boss. Like if your boss runs Starbucks and you're below them and you want to keep that job, don't date them. But if you're like, well, I'm going to quit this job anyway, or I'm moving on to another job, then yeah, go ahead and date them, because that would not be good to date your boss, you know, and then have the relationship not go well, or she cheats on you or you cheat on her or something. You see what I'm saying? So that can complicate things. So let's get into fixing your steroid cycle. So who's up first? Who has a good one?
Steve, I got one for you, because you're pretty good with steroids and with this topic in particular. The guy, he goes on and writes a long paragraph about steroids negatively affecting endurance. And we always talk about that. And he wants to know why. Why is it that steroids are negative when it comes to endurance athletes?
Yeah, this is a good one. I actually brought up the same topic. And we'll get Trevor on this in a second. But let me just say the obvious one first. Anabolic steroids are inflammatory. Like when you go to the doctor and you have something like a sinus infection or asthma or something, they'll prescribe you corticosteroids, because corticosteroids are anti-inflammatory. Now, I'm not saying that's a good thing. Taking anti-inflammation drugs are not a good thing. Corticosteroids have some horrible side effects, long-term side effects. So it's not necessarily a good thing. But the thing with anabolic steroids is they are inflammatory and they do raise red blood cell counts. So you would think they'd be great for endurance. But since they are inflammatory, that is a negative thing. Tren, for example, actually increases PGF2A. And that's a very potent prostaglandin inflammatory type of thing in the body. And when you get that and you take Tren, you'll notice you're like, you can't breathe, you know? And it's like, you can't do cardio. Like, what is wrong with me? I used to run a 20-minute 5K, and now I can't even run 26-minute 5K. What the hell happened? Well, that's why. You know, if you can't breathe and your cardio can't go, how are you supposed to increase your endurance? So that is the main reasons why steroids, and Tren in particular, are bad for cardio.
The most common side effect of steroids is that they raise blood pressure. So what happens when you raise blood pressure? It kills your endurance. So that's basically the simplest layman's terms way I can put it. all steroids will raise blood pressure. Even if you're using highly anabolic steroids like Anavar, Winstrol, things like that, they still will raise blood pressure. Higher your blood pressure, the worse your endurance.
Okay.
You know, and let's not forget the water retention on some of them too. You know, Steve's often used the metaphor of, you know, think about running and you got 2 gallons of water strapped to your back, how fast you're going to be. So don't forget about that if you're running aromatizing compounds too.
Yeah, it'd be equivalent to carrying a gallon of water on your back. Try that. Go run a mile carrying a gallon of water and tell me how that goes for you. Probably won't go too well. So next one is, he says he hopped on a test cycle, only 300 milligrams a week. He's taking an AI and his nipples are hurting. He wants to know what the hell is going on. So what would be your advice to this guy?
His AI is fake.
You know, it could be as simple as that. And it could be he's just ultra sensitive to estrogen. I mean, this is one of those things you got to get, you know, when you're new, you have to get blood work mid-cycle. And this guy's a prime example because you have to know, you know, is your estrogen through the roof? And then you go from there and figure out, is the AI bunk? I'm assuming it probably is when you're running that low of a dose. But you have to figure it out for yourself. You know, maybe he had pre-existing gyno. Maybe it's not big and he didn't really realize it, but he had it from puberty, you know, and now it's starting to flare up. So it could be a bunch of things, but yeah, you got to get blood work when that happens.
I'm pretty confident his AI is fake. I mean, 300 milligrams of tests isn't that much. Our next question, basically this guy wrote me like a freaking paragraph, but he wants to know if he can use shoulders as an injection site for his first injection. So basically he's doing 500 milligrams of tests per week. His test is 250 milligrams per milliliter, so he's doing 1 milliliter once per week. And I told him, yeah, you could just use shoulders. Like, you could do left delt, right delt, left delt, right delt. But I told him that it's better to use, you know, like, glutes as a first injection site. You know, shoulders, if it's a new injection site, is going to cause some post-injection pain. But you could use shoulders. I mean, what are your guys' thoughts on this?
The first time I injected was in my shoulders, and my logic behind that is whenever you're walking through a door or something, you'll bump your shoulder into the wall or into the door. So I was like, I'm always bumping my shoulders, so I might as well inject there because it's not like a sensitive spot. Like, I bump my shoulder hard and I won't care, you know? So the first time I injected 500 milligrams of sustenin. So it's 2 cc's into the shoulder. Oh, the pip was so bad because I was shaking. Sustenin hurts. So my advice is, if it's something that doesn't have bad post-injection pain, you know, you can inject 2 cc's, maybe even 2.5 cc's, no problem. But if it's something like Primo or Sustenin or Prop, you want to go less. Less is better, because the more you inject of something that gives you PIP, the more pain you're going to have, post-injection pain. So you need to find different spots that you like. And hey, sometimes the muscles don't like certain spots. My right quad has no problem being injected. My left quad hates being injected. I don't know why, but every time I injected my left quad, it just doesn't go well. I don't know if it's something in my head or something with my body, but it's probably a combination of both. So I just avoid it. So you need to find 4, 5, 6 good injection spots that you like, then go from there.
You know, it's a small muscle. Like, I don't mind it because, you know, in my mind, you can see what you're doing a little easier than when you're doing glutes and you got to twist around. So from that point of view, I don't mind it. But, you know, it's a small muscle. It's going to bug you. You're going to want to give it a break. I think, you know, the more sites, the better, to be honest. Here's a good one that came in. Really, really quick answer, I think. He just wants to know if any of us have ever used topical Nutriball. I've only ever used one topical product, and it was when I was like 20 years old, and it was one test. And from then on, I said, I'll never use another topical hormone again or anything like it. Nutriball, to me, it's you could take it orally and it's going to absorb perfectly fine. I don't see a benefit to it. I don't know. Am I missing something here, or, you know, does it make any sense?
For the most part, topical products are a waste of money. The absorption rate is like 2%.
Yeah, I told this guy, listen, SARMS-1, They're Evo and EF approved source for SARMs. Just don't be stubborn. Don't be cheap. Don't try to reinvent the wheel. Just go buy Leader Raw from them. You know what I'm saying? You know you're going to get the real shit. So it works. Your appetite's going to go sky high on it. That's one of the telltale signs. I mean, so just, you know, no reason to fuck around, you know, and there's just no reason when it's so available, and get it while it's still legal, because SARMs and these SARMs-like products like Nutribol will probably be banned in the next year or so. So might as well load up now, guys, and try to, you know, get it. And you can hit any of us up for a coupon code on the forums. So hit us up on EF or Evo.
One thing I don't get is that I can see the appeal to using like a topical testosterone, because then you wouldn't have to do injections, right? And no one really likes to do injections. Maybe you're traveling, or maybe you have kids, you don't want to keep needles around. But Nutriball is an oral. It doesn't even require injections. So why would you go through all the hassle of having to apply this topical cream every single day when you could just take a pill and be done with it? I don't get it at all.
So our next topic, guys, is going to be PCT and supplements. So let's get into this. This first one's for Trevor. He wants to know NAC versus N2 Guard. What are the differences and which one should he get?
Well, NAC stands for N-acetylcysteine. It's a very good antioxidant. It's also shown to promote liver health. But NAC isn't N2 Guard. So if you're getting N2 Guard, you don't need NAC because it's in there. It kind of be like, do I need vitamin C if I'm taking a multivitamin that contains larger doses of vitamin C? No, you wouldn't. It'd be redundant. So yeah, if you're getting NT Guard, you get NAC, so you don't need to take both.
Yeah, guys, I'm a big fan of NT Guard. It's my favorite supplement. It sells like hotcakes. It covers you from A to Z. It has Tutka. It's got milk thistle. It's got all the stuff that we've used over the years, and it's all in one. So it's an all-in-one supplement. You need to use that on cycle. And if you can use it year-round, what I like to do on cycle is run 7 caps. And then off-cycle, I'll run 3 to 4 caps to save a little money. So you run it year-round.
I got a bone to pick with you, Steve. Have you ever actually bought hotcakes?
Man, like 20 years ago, hotcakes from McDonald's, yeah.
I've never, like, I don't know where that saying came from. I don't think people buy hotcakes anymore.
Oh, okay, yeah. I didn't know where I thought you were trying to make an analogy there. You kind of confused me. So, so Matt, do you have one?
Yeah, I got a good one for Trevor. The guy just wants to know, he bought some DHEA, and he wants to know what kind of results can he expect from using this product.
So the problem with DHEA is that it's the precursor to all anabolic sex hormones. So it's the precursor to testosterone, which is good, but it's also the precursor to estrogen. So depending on your genetics and depending on just your individual body type, your body might convert a lot of that DHEA into estrogen, which is obviously what you don't want. So, I mean, I really don't like DHEA. I'd much rather have you use like a natural testosterone booster or just run gear. DHEA, it's really not that good. Like on paper, it seems like great. Like, hey, it's a precursor to testosterone, and that's what they sell you in like these like supplement write-ups, but they don't tell you it's also the precursor to estrogen. So, I mean, if you want to use DHEA, make sure you're using an estrogen blocker with it, but why not just run some tests? Like if you want testosterone, take testosterone.
So I have one. I know, Trevor, you got a couple. This guy wants to know, he's in PCT. Things went really well on cycle, so he's trying to keep his gains. He's running the perfect PCT. He wants to know, should I get HC Generate or HC Generate ES? And he wants to know what are the differences. So let me kind of say right off the bat, 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, before the ES version came out, which stands for extra strength, we used to use HC Generate Classic, and we used to double dose it during PCT to get that really good result. So that's why they came out with the extra strength version, because that kind of replaces you from having to double dose the classic version. So the ES version has more ingredients, more of the same ingredients, And it also has extra ingredients like mucuna, okay, which does cause prolactin levels to come down. So when your prolactin levels come down, you'll get a boost in your desire to have sex. So boost in libido is going to happen. So that is the difference between the two. If you can afford it, okay, you definitely run the ES, okay? But let's say you're really struggling, you know, you're struggling to pay for your PCT, you need to run the AC Generate Classic, okay? That would be the situation, run both. So what are the differences between the two, guys, that you guys noticed?
Well, I think for me, Steve, it's you can really feel the difference when you run both products. So the main thing is you got to run something. Because that's what makes you, a lot of you guys feel like crap when you don't run a natural test booster in your PCT. You know, you're kind of trying to put a whole bunch of things together at the same time. And when they don't come together at the same time, that's when you feel like crap. You know, so as your test is going out of your system or whatever you're running is going out of your system, you know, then you're starting to, you want to try to run the CIRMs at the right time so they pick up. And, you know, it's just kind of a recipe for a disaster, you know, for the guys that feel like crap, lose their gains, stop training hard, get depressed, all that. So running a good natural testosterone booster is going to help and it's going to be very important. But I think running the ES version, you know, just takes it to the next level. And especially when it comes to, wanting to work out hard like you were when you were on, because it'll help you still have that feeling. And also, especially with the sex drive part of it, because a lot of guys, when their hormones are fluctuating like crazy, especially since you've just been really, really high for a long time, probably 12 weeks or so, you know, and then all of a sudden that starts to crash down, you really, really want the stronger ingredients and you want the higher doses. So run the ES if you can, but if you can't, run the regular version and just get, I'm pretty sure you can get a double pack and save some money. And then you could probably even dose it a little bit higher in PCT and you'll have some left over for after PCT. So you really can't lose either way.
This is the analogy I like to give. HD Generate is like that Toyota Camry. It's reliable. It's predictable. It's going to get you to work every single day and not break down. HC Generate Extra Strength is kind of like the Lexus. You know, it's got some extra bells and whistles, some fancy features. Both are great options, but it's kind of, you have to realize, you have to, is it in your budget to get the best or do you just need what's safe and known? So neither are a bad option, but if you can afford the extra strength, you're going to get some extra bells and whistles and some extra features. So I got another email question. Steve, I'm going to let you answer this because I'm burnt out. He wants to know, why do you not use HCG in a PCT?
Yeah, I'm burnt out from that question too. Guys, HCG, okay, is a hormone. So when you take HCG, you're mimicking your LH. So that's going to cause your pituitary glands to signal to shut off. So it's kind of counterproductive to do that during PCT. During PCT, you want to get a soft landing and then put your body on the road to recovery. So if you run HCG during PCT, you're just delaying recovery. So really, it makes no sense. In PCT, you want to run a CIRM because CIRMs block estrogen from going to the pituitary glands and then cause your pituitary glands to start shooting out hormones. And you want to run your natural testosterone booster, your AC Generate, AC Generate ES, that is going to naturally cause your LH to go up, your testosterone to go up, and boost your Leydig cells without increasing your estrogen. So that's what you want to run in PCT, not the HCG. So basically, if you run HCG and PCT, you'll probably feel better, yes, because you are bypassing your pituitary glands and just feeding your Leydig cells. So your balls will get bigger, your testosterone levels will go up, but you're actually shutting yourself, keeping yourself shut down and not allowing your pituitary glands to recover. And that is how you recover your HPTA. So you're just delaying recovery and you're just fucking yourself over. So that's kind of stupid to do.
I think guys run it for two benefits. One is their nuts get bigger, and two, because they feel good. Both of those to me make no sense, because your nuts will come back to size when you recover. So why delay it? And the feel good part, you know what else will make you feel good? If you start injecting testosterone in your PCT, you'll feel good. But is that going to do any benefits for you? You guys know that's a really stupid question, right? Obviously, you're not going to use testosterone in your PCT. So I think that's the draw to it. But I think there's no, absolutely no purpose for it. If we got time, I got one question that was sent to me for Steve. Because they know that you're more of a sensitive stomach guy and you're not a big protein powder guy. He says he's having issues with whey protein on his stomach. It's causing him bloating. He's gassy and he feels uncomfortable. He wants to know if switching to a beef protein powder would be better because it's not dairy. So Steve, have you ever had any experience with beef protein, seeing how you're a sensitive stomach guy?
Well, the problem with beef protein, it's still, anytime you process something, okay, make it into a powder, it's still processed. So if you're trying to avoid processed foods, you're still not fixing the issue. So if you have a sensitive stomach, you have IBS, you have Crohn's. I've had IBS all my life. Not a big issue with IBS, but enough where it can fuck me up. Like if I'm going to the game and I eat the wrong thing before the game, I don't want to spend the game in the fucking public bathroom. I want to spend the game watching the game. So yeah, you got to be careful what you put in your body. So is it better than whey protein? Possibly. It probably is, because it's not the dairy. But I would tell you, just eat a small steak. Eat a small grass-fed burger instead if you want your protein. That's going to be easier for you to digest than having any type of whey powder. So it's not the end of the world if you miss having meat. I don't eat meat every day, okay? I'll have a grass-fed steak or grass-fed burger probably once a week, maybe twice a week during like the holidays. Like 4th of July, I had a grass-fed steak, and then last weekend I had a grass-fed burger, okay? But that was because it was a holiday and everyone was barbecuing on 4th of July. But in a normal situation, I'll only do it once a week at the most. So I don't eat that much meat. It's not the end of the world, okay, if you don't. Trevor, what do you have to say about this? And then we're going to move on to diet, because this actually transitions to diet as well.
I got a really good diet question. So the problem with beef supplements is most beef supplements are made of collagen, which is not a complete protein source. It does not contain all the essential amino acids. So if you're struggling from digestive issues from a whey protein, I would recommend a good quality vegan protein. And a lot of the vegan proteins are naturally flavored and sweetened with stevia. So, I mean, if you find a high quality vegan protein, that would probably be your best option. So I had this email sent to me this morning. Hey, Trev, I know you're really busy. Just a quick question for you. So I follow you on Instagram, and I just saw the ketogenic meal plan you posted. I also read the carb cycling article you wrote on evolutionary.org. Both seem like great diet options. I'm really confused on which one would be the best diet for me. I love this question, and I feel like this is a situation a lot of people are in. You buy a magazine. The first article is paleo diet. The second article is intermittent fasting. The third diet is keto diets. The fourth diet is carb cycling. The fifth diet is we're bombarded with information, and someone just starting out, it's enough to go, oh my goodness. So the biggest thing is consistency and making this a lifestyle. So you need to find the diet style that you can stick to and be consistent with. There's no magic diet. You just need to find a diet template that you enjoy and you can follow. So what I would recommend is, do you like eating carbs? Then a carb cycling diet would probably be best for you. If you're not a really big carb guy, you could try a keto diet with a carb refeed once a week. If you're not really big into grains, you could try a paleo diet. Like, there's no magic diet. What really matters is your caloric intake, getting the proper macronutrients. Steve and Matt, what are you guys' thoughts on this?
I think the key with any diet, okay, that you try, here's the thing. Americans, we tried every fucking diet the past 30 years. We exercise more than any other country. We have more gyms than all the other countries combined. We have more CrossFit gyms than any other countries has gyms. All right. So we're exercising like crazy. We love sports. You go to Saturday and Sunday to the park, you see soccer, baseball, adults and kids playing. I mean, we exercise like crazy. Why are we still getting fat? And it can be attributed to the sugars, all the sugar in our diet, all the snacking is killing us. The lack of sleep. Okay, so we get up in the morning, 6 o'clock, we eat. We eat all day, eat till 10, 11 at night, snacking while watching TV, then go to sleep. So we're not eating for like 5 hours out of the day, and we're eating for the rest. So what happens when you do that is your insulin levels never come down. Your body's constantly in storage mode. But also the foods we're eating are causing us to be in storage mode. The sugars, the refined sugars, refined flours, cereals, Cheerios, for example, has a worse glycemic load than a fucking Mars bar. Yet we see doctors tell people, oh, Cheerios is good for you. It's good for your heart. There's commercials saying that. So we're being misled. It's nobody's fault. It's not people being lazy. It's just bad information. So it's what you eat, how often you eat, and all the snacking. So I would tell this person, stick to 2 or 3 meals a day of good quality food, whole foods, all right? And stay away from the processed shit and stay away from the sugars and the refined flours and all that. And that would be your first step to losing weight.
I mean, any diet that you can stick to is going to work for you. You know, it depends on your goals. But I think you really need to learn how you respond personally. Like I know Trevor could eat 300-400 grams of carbs per day and look great and have no issues. And I know if I ate 300 to 400 grams of carbs per day, it's not going to go well. I'm going to start to gain fat and it's going to be terrible. You know, so for me, I know I'm not going to run anything that's high carb because it just doesn't do well for me. So I think, you know, there's nothing wrong with trying these things out. Keto specifically is one you got to play with because, you know, when you read a lot of people's, you know, reviews and their logs on running a keto diet, they struggle to find enough foods to eat. You know, they don't want to just be drinking oil to get in their fat requirements for the day. So I think something like what Trevor posted, where he's given you recipes, you know, that could be really useful. But, you know, if you find yourself getting sick of the foods or you're not able to, you know, plan a whole week out, then it's probably not the best diet for you. You have to fit what works into your lifestyle. For me, intermittent fasting works great because I'm so busy with, you know, the family, the kids, sports, everything. It's just easier for me to not have to worry about food during certain times of the day, you know? So it's really, really, you know, comes down to the individual. So I got a good one here for Trevor because I know he's done a lot of research on this one. The guy just wants to know, real simple, what are some of the benefits of eating beets? Because he sees, you know, it's something that wasn't popular and now it seems to be getting really popular again.
Okay, so first off, beets are a really healthy food, don't get me wrong, but right now it's kind of like the flavor of the month. Like, everyone's just talking about it. I think beets are great, but I mean, it's kind of just, right now it's a sexy topic, so that's why everyone's talking about it. Taking beets before your workout isn't going to add 3 inches to your arms. Beets, it's a root vegetable. They're very, very dark purple. So if a food is rich in colors, that means it contains a lot of antioxidants and a lot of phytopigments, which are very good cancer protectors. What's really good about beets is that they're high in nitrates, so that makes them a vasodilator. So it'll increase blood flow and help give you a better pump. The Romans actually used beets as Viagra back in the ancient days. So beets do work. They increase blood flow. But, I mean, it's kind of just the flavor of the month. Like, don't think eating beets before your workout is going to make the end all or be all.
So you eat them raw, Trevor? If you do eat them, you eat them, like, to eat them raw or do you cook them?
You want to roast them. It's kind of like,
it's almost like. You can't eat them raw?
It's pretty tough, man. It's not like a carrot. Like, it's very, very tough. It's like a sweet potato, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not really I don't really try it very much. I tried it a few times. I didn't really like it cooked, so it's not my style. So I have a good one here. This is for both of you guys. This can be applied to both of you guys. He wants to know. He says, thank you for the show. I've learned a lot. I started noticing after listening to the show that the frozen chicken I was getting at Walmart contained a lot of preservatives and high fructose corn syrup and flour. And I'm trying to lose weight. So I stopped getting that and I started getting natural chicken and natural turkey from my health food store that's hormone free. But my problem is it was so much easier just to throw my frozen chicken in the microwave to cook. And now I have to try to figure out how to cook a raw chicken or raw turkey breast. So he wants to know, how do you guys do it to make it simple to prevent myself from getting food poisoning? So I'll let Matt go first. He's the family man. How do you guys do it? And I'll let Trevor go second because he's the college guy and he doesn't have time to cook. So what's the secret?
So my secret is I buy both. I do buy fresh chicken, and that will be for more like the family dinners, especially now with nice weather. It's an easy food to barbecue. But I do get frozen chicken as well from Costco. And you just have to look. I'm sure if you're going to Walmart, I'm sure there's more than one brand. But the one that I get, all it has in it is a little bit of sodium and water. That's all they use to freeze it. So you just have to read what's in it. You obviously, he's right. I'm glad he caught it. You know, you don't want something with preservatives, you know, a ton of them, and like flour. That seems ridiculous to me. But you know what? Honestly, cooking chicken is extremely easy. If you have a raw chicken and you put it in the oven, it'll take you like, depending on the size, you know, 30 minutes to cook and it's done. It's really not hard. So, you know, if you're going to meal prep, I would look for the frozen option just because it's easy to do. And then you're going to save it for a week anyways. But for a family thing, get the fresh, learn how to cook. It's really not a big deal to cook.
So like Matt said, you buy fresh chicken breast, you literally take a baking pan, put aluminum foil on it, put the chicken breast on it, preheat the oven to 350, put in there for like 25 minutes, take it out. It's done. It's like, it's that simple. Like if I made a YouTube video on how to cook chicken breast, no one would watch it because they'd be like, wow, this is like so simple and boring that was a waste of my time to watch. Like it's literally that simple. My advice for you is buy yourself a big slow cooker. Throw your chicken breast in there. It can be fresh, it can be frozen, it doesn't matter. Add about 2 cups of vinegar and then the rest with water. If you want to get fancy, you can add taco seasoning. You could add whatever herbs or spices you like, you know, parsley, garlic, whatever. Put that on overnight. I put it on high for 12 hours and that will cook the chicken breast. And because it's boiling it, it almost gives it like a pulled pork texture. It's really, really good. Basically, what you do is once it's done cooking, you just pour off all the liquid, and then you have like 20 to 30 pounds of cooked chicken breast in there, and it's all done. So then you can just scoop it out and put it into your Tupperware or whatever you're doing. It's absolutely delicious, and it's going to give you the most moist, tender chicken you've ever ate.
Yeah, you can get one of those temperature things too if you're worried about it being undercooked, and stick it in the chicken, and you want to make sure it's 165 inside the chicken. That will tell you that it's ready to eat. So if that's what you're worried about, that's a foolproof way to know for sure. So we have time for one more diet question before we get into workout. Who wants to just take a stab at it?
I got one.
Yeah, go ahead.
Question. Krill oil versus fish oil. What's the difference? You guys just want me to answer it quick?
Yeah, I mean, I like N2BM's krill oil because it's so much more efficient. I think just you know, ounce by ounce, I think krill oil is much more efficient and it's much more better. We actually had a podcast about that. I can't remember who our guest was, but it's better for the environment, krill, because krill is a little shrimp. And then fish, you know, our fish is being depleted as it is. But go ahead, Trevor, and you finish it off, and then we'll move on to the workout.
So krill, this is the layman's terms. I can get into the science about how your body absorbs phospholipid fatty acids better, but like this is the simple way. Krill are mini fish. So it's kind of like comparing broccoli to broccoli sprouts, right? Broccoli is healthy, but broccoli sprouts are even healthier. So, I mean, like, fish oil is good, but krill oil, because they're mini fish, it's just going to be way less processed. There's going to be way less contaminants. You're going to be getting additional health benefits.
The only thing to add is, you know, a lot of people buy fish oil because it's cheaper than krill. If you're going to get a fish oil, just make sure you look at the DHA and EPA. And you want the highest concentration when it comes to the serving, you know. So if there's a gram of fish oil, you want to look for, you know, as close to that as possible of EPA and DHA. You know, if you're around 700, 800 milligrams out of that gram, that's a pretty good quality. But if you get something and, you know, it's down in the 300-400, you're just buying fillers at that point. So just make sure you read your labels. If you want to be safe, just get the krill oil from N2BM, and then you don't have to worry about it because you know the quality's there. And it's really actually not expensive. I want to say it's like $15 for a month's supply. So, you know, it's really not bad at all.
So I have a good workout question first. It may be a little longer, and I'll let you guys finish it out with your questions. But this guy's a question for all three of us. He wants to know, he's getting back into weight training. His problem before was he felt like he didn't set a time to weight train. He didn't have a schedule, and that kind of threw him off track. So he wants to know what we do to keep ourselves on track. When do we work out during the day? Is it before work? Is it after work? Is it on lunch break? So let me answer this real quick. My strategy right now, and it works good for me, is I have a usual normal 9-to-5 job, and what I do is I will intermittent fast the whole morning, and around 1 o'clock I will go to the gym during my lunch break and work out for like an hour, do my thing. Then after, I will eat. I usually have nuts post-workout and some fruit. That's my post-workout meal. And then after work, I like to go to the beach. I like to read a book. I like to just unwind. So my workouts are out of the way versus waiting till after work when my mind is like fried. So that seems to work really good for me. And plus the gym is a lot less busy at 1 o'clock than it would be at 5, 6 o'clock. So you guys tell me, what's your guys' strategy with working out? What time do you guys like to go?
Steve, I didn't know you like long walks on the beach.
It depends. If it's hot, I don't want to get sunburned. But yeah, for this time of year, it is definitely hot. But yeah, if you like to go with me, you're welcome to come. I'm just messing with you. All right, go ahead. Tell us your story.
So for me, I'm kind of a unique situation that I love working out. I would go to the gym every single day, even if I knew I wasn't going to get any results, just because for me, it's kind of like my therapy. It's how I release all of my energy. So my schedule every day is just all over the place because I got meetings, I'm teaching some days, I got podcast guests some days. So I kind of plan out my schedule the night before, and then I fit my workout in where I can. If I have an extremely busy day, like some days I'm literally gone from 8 to 8, I'll get up and get my workout in first thing in the morning. That's what I would recommend. So I don't know this guy's history or background or anything, but when I was engineering and I was literally in lectures from 8 to 8 every day, I would get up at 5 a.m. and train before, because I'd have a lot of friends that say, oh, I want to sleep in. But every time when 8 p.m. rolls around, you're tired from the day and then you don't end up going. So if you got a very, very hectic, you know, work, and then maybe you got a family and you're coming home and that's time with your kids, set the alarm and get up and do it before work. It's going to be tough. And when that alarm goes off, you're going to have to fight every urge not to hit that snooze button, but just get up. Once you're up, you're in the gym, the blood's flowing, you're going to have a good workout. It's just getting to the gym is the hard part.
I think the best thing you could ever have is a set plan. You know, like if you're able to train like how Steve's doing it right now every day at 1 o'clock and that's your training time, that's perfect because you'll be consistent. You'll do it. You'll stick with it. You know, okay, it's almost one. It's time to go to the gym. Where if you don't have a plan, you're not going to go. You might for a little while, but it's going to fall off, you know, because you're going to get busy. You know, it's hot out. I'm tired. It's cold out. I don't want to shovel the driveway. You know, there's just so many things that can get in the way. You need to have that time. So I like Trevor's idea. If you're super busy, you know, plan it per day. You know, plan the time that it's going to work that day. But the fact is you have to plan it. If you don't plan it, you're not going to go. So this is actually a really good topic for me personally right now because I'm starting a new job on Monday and it's going to be very different. So what I've had the last six, almost 7 years is a ton of flexibility. So I could kind of come and go as I please, do whatever I got to do. And I was training basically how Steve described. You know, I was doing it intermittent fasting and then training midday and then having my first meal after. I'm going to be in an office now 75% of my time. So I don't have the flexibility I used to have. So I'm going to have to go back to what I did, you know, around 8 years ago, which is training at, you know, 5, 6 in the morning. And that's going to be difficult for me. But I, looking back, that's when I had really good results. So I'm going to be switching it up starting Monday and I will let you guys know how it goes. I expect to be a little bit tired the first bit, but I'm looking forward to a change. We've talked about that too. Things get stale and sometimes it's good for a change. So, you know, I'm kind of looking forward to it from that end. So I got a question. This might be good for Steve. Because he's done kind of some powerlifting and, you know, a little bit of different stuff back in his day. And the guy wants to know, he goes to more of like a hardcore gym and he sees a lot of guys doing exercises with chain. And he wants to know if that's something that he should try. Like, is that, a secret? Is that something to, you know, help him progress faster? So what do you think about using chains?
I've never used them. I haven't been to a gym that has them. So, but the chains, if you think about it, like say you're bench pressing, the chains are connected to the bar. As you're bringing the bar down, the chains are on the ground more. So the weight of the chain decreases. Then when you push back up, the weight comes off the ground more. The weight of the chain comes off the ground. So the weight of the chain that's giving you the pressure will increase on the way up. So you can really get a nice pump doing that because the weight is changing as you go down and then up. So I've personally never done it, but I can understand why you see on YouTube and stuff people doing it and their veins are popping out and stuff. I'm sure you're getting a really nice pump from doing it. So if that's available at your gym, give it a shot. I wouldn't do it every time, but I would do it, here and there. It sounds like something that could really work, but a lot of gyms don't want you using chains because they don't want anything on the floor. They're very anal about what's on the floor and against the wall. My gym, if you touch the wall with your hand, they can terminate your membership. They're like, do not touch the walls, you know? So it's like a big deal.
I got a listener question. He wants to know how to properly warm up for squats.
You know, let me hit that one quick because I tried a routine once and it ended up being horrible. So I'm going to tell you what I don't recommend. It was basically just doing a few body weight squats, which is fine. But then it was a lot of like explosive jumping into a squat, just body weight. And I found that actually really fatigued my quads for some reason. And it really hurt me during squats. What I would think the proper way is, and it requires patience, is to start with just the bar, you know, and really very slowly work your way up. Because I've been guilty of it so many times, you know, of going, you know, just right to, you know, say you throw a plate on, you're at 135, and then you throw, you know, another plate on, then you're up to 225. Like, that's too fast to go up. You know, even if that's warm-up weight for you, you know, it's not a working set, it's still fast. You know, I would do a bunch of sets until you get up to your working weight. And it's just to be safe because, you know, I've done it. And when I found it hurts, it almost feels like a tear in your hamstring. And even when it's not an injury, it'll still ruin your workout, you know? So you're much better off. Like for me, I'll dedicate 10 sets. You know, there's nothing wrong with doing a whole bunch of warmups and then coming back down just the same way. So I think slow and steady is going to be my best advice for that.
So I have one, and then I'll let you guys finish out with a question each if you guys have one. Really quick, he wants to know, how much do we pay for our gym membership and how far are we from the gym? This question's for all of us. Let me go first. I pay cash, $300 up front for my gym membership. The disadvantage of doing that is if your gym closes or moves or something, that may, you know, you're probably not going to get your money back. So that's a disadvantage. But the advantage is I'm not giving them my credit card, because a lot of these gyms, you give them your credit card and you get a contract. And after a year, they will renew your contract without notifying you, and they'll keep billing you. And then they'll be like, well, if you read the contract, it says after a year, you renew for another year. So now if you break your contract, you've got to pay a penalty, blah, blah, blah. So I don't give them my credit card. They can kiss my ass. I just pay cash up front. You get a receipt. Done deal. I don't want to use credit cards. How far am I from my gym? I'm very close. I'm only about a 10 or 12 minute drive and about 4 miles, so I can bicycle to the gym as well. So I'm really lucky in that regard. How about you, Trevor, and then Matt?
Another thing you have to be really careful about is if you're on like a bi-weekly or monthly payment, sometimes they'll add things like equipment upgrade fees. Like every 6 months, they'll bill you like an extra $150, and it's in the contract, so there's nothing you can really do about it. So I do the same thing as Steve. I think I paid $400 up front. It was like $40 a month, buy 10 months, get two free. It was like a New Year special. My gym is literally a 10-minute walk from my condo, so I just walk there. It couldn't be more convenient. It's 24/7. It's a really great gym. I actually purchased my condo on purpose, knowing that it was a 5 to 10 minute walk to the gym and about a 10 to 15 minute walk to the university, because I save so much time walking to the university and walking to the gym every day. I very rarely use my car.
So mine's changed quite a bit. I've lived where I am now just over 3 years. And when I first came here, there was three options. There's a rec center, like where my kids play hockey and all that. There's a junior hockey team that plays there. So there's that. There's a regular franchise gym in town. And then there's another gym that's like a professional gym. Like they train professional athletes. It's super high end. So I ended up joining, when I first moved here, to the rec center. That was terrible because there was like no equipment in there, and you get 4 or 5 college kids come across, because it's basically right across the street from a campus. They get free membership, so they don't care. They come in, they dick around. There's only like 3 benches. There's like 1 squat rack. So you were never able to use what you wanted, even if there's only 5 people there. So I had that for a year, got rid of it, joined the regular gym, the franchise gym. And while I was there, they built Planet Fitness in town. Well, one day, the franchise gym, the front doors were locked. They went under because they could no longer compete. And they were charging around like $22 a month for their membership fee. Planet Fitness charges like $10. So how do you compete with that, right? Especially in a small town. So then I joined the Planet Fitness and worked out there with my wife for a little while. It ended up being a waste of time and I didn't like it. It was okay for certain things. You know, like if you prefer to do cardio at the gym, there's tons of cardio machines, but there's just not the selection of weights, you know, that somebody like us or really into fitness would want. So actually right now I bought from a friend a home gym, and it's kind of getting put together right now. I don't have everything, but it's really, really good. He worked in a big sales company and he got a lot of, you know, he'd hit incentive. He could choose from a catalog. So literally he built up this huge gym and didn't use it and sold it to me for really, really, really cheap. So I have a ton of stuff set up there, and that's where I'm going at this point.
Yeah, I had this lady come up to me one time. I was cleaning, and she's like, "Can you keep it down? You're being a little too loud." And I was like, "Huh?" I'm like, "What the fuck are you talking about, lady? I'm cleaning. What do you want me to do? I'm doing cleans and then dropping away. Doing cleans, dropping away. Like fucking 200, 250 pound cleans. And it's like, how am I supposed to fucking be quiet?" So I told her, I was like, "You know what? There's a Planet Fitness across the street. You should go there." And she just looked at me and she was like, and she turned around and walked away. And she never fucked with me again. So that's a true story. Sometimes you just have to like tell someone that. So unfortunately, guys, we are out of time. So save the questions for next time. We're already at the hour. It was a great show. We covered a lot of topics. Keep the questions coming, guys. And then next week, we will hit your new questions. Thanks for listening. Have a good time. Have a good weekend.